You ready to go?
I'm ready when you are.
Okay, so this is State of South Dakota versus CO. Eric Davis appears on behalf of the appellant and Chelsea Wenzel on behalf of the state, happily. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your initial argument, and then Mr. Davis, you'll have a five-minute rebuttal. The yellow light will come on at 2 minutes. You may proceed at this time, Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Chief Justice Jensen. May it please the court, Ms. Wenzel, Ms. Lawler. It turns out it is not particularly easy to prepare an oral argument when you know that you are going to be coming up immediately after two excellent attorneys in the court have already discussed the issue, raising essentially the same issues of law. And so, of course, much of what I intend to argue today has been informed by the last 35 minutes. And I think the arguments and authorities cited by my colleagues in the Pennington County Public Defender's Office are correct. But respectfully, I do not think the court needs to go as far as it is being invited to go in this case, because I do not think these cases have anything to do with prosecutorial discretion. I think they can be resolved using the most fundamental and basic canons of statutory construction. In my first job as a brand new associate fresh out of law school, I worked for a seasoned trial attorney, and I would often go to him knowing very little about how to practice law, as young associates do, and I would ask questions like, how, for example, would a person open a guardianship proceeding? And he would say, why are you asking me? Go to the red books. You know, this whole business is governed by rules. Everyone's nice enough to write them down. Go read the rules, go read the guardianship chapter, figure it out, and then come to me if you have specific questions. And that was pretty good advice, and it served me well throughout my entire career, even though I would often go to the firm's law library and mutter that I was just looking for a form, and by the way, we don't have any red books. Turns out they changed the color sometime probably before I was born, but I figured that out, and I learned to go to the code books as my primary source of material. And I looked in your beautiful law library today. You still have the red books, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that that advice has served me very well in the past years of my practice. And unlike Ms. Lawler and Mr. Olson in the Pennington County Public Defender's Office, who I understand practice almost exclusively in the area of juvenile law, I confess this is the first juvenile case I have ever touched in my legal career. And so I fell back on that old advice to look at the statutes. And the statutes, as we've already discussed today, make it clear the legislature has defined a child in need of supervision as any child who has violated SDCL 35-23-21. And when we look at that statute, the legislature says one violates that statute by being under the age of 21 and driving with a BAC of 0.02% or more. Well, that's my client. The state says that my client operated a motor vehicle with a BAC of 0.02 or more. Therefore, he is a child in need of supervision. And the state's argument is essentially, yes, he is statutorily defined as a child in need of supervision, but only if the prosecutor agrees with that assessment. And if the prosecutor does not agree with that assessment for whatever reason, then my client is not entitled to the guidance and benefit and control offered by the CHINS program and is instead going to be punished as if he were a 50-year-old man instead of the 16-year-old child that he is. And I do not believe that result is in harmony with the CHINS statutes. Ms. Lawler, in her arguments and her briefing, will explain that that was not the legislature's intent, that that's not particularly good policy, that that's not helpful to children, that children are better served in CHINS court, and the state would argue the contrary. I guess I'm not taking a position on that as to which is correct, and I don't think the court should either, because I don't think the court has to. Because one thing we know for certain is that jurisdictional questions and the questions of what conduct violates the law are within the sole purview of the legislature, and the legislature has spoken in this case, and I do not believe that there is any ambiguity in the statute that says that a child, that someone violates the zero tolerance statutes by being under the age of 21 and driving a motor vehicle with a BAC of 0.02 or more. If the state, it seems to me, wants to justify reaching the exact opposite conclusion of that which is unambiguously commanded by the statute, it is going to need to bring something more to the table than references to the common law doctrine of prosecutorial discretion or some older statutes enacted far before this recent and comprehensive revision of the juvenile justice system and the CHINS program, which are being amended just within the last few years. The statute that Ms. Wenzel referred to that talks about the state shall charge a person with operating a motor vehicle with .08 or more with a DUI is a much older statute, almost 15 years older. And to bring that statute into play, or some of the other statutes into play that the state has briefed, essentially elevates general statutes above more specific statutes. It elevates previously enacted statutes over more relevant statutes, and that violates two of the fundamental canons of statutory construction. And that assumes that we have an ambiguous statute, which I don't think we have.
So, Mr. Davis, if I understand your argument, if you have a 16-year-old who is under the influence of a prescription drug driving, prosecution could still, state could still file under the DUI statute because it doesn't fall under the zero tolerance law.
I believe that is correct, yes. Based on a strict reading of the statute, I believe that is correct. I'm not saying that's good policy. I'm not saying that's bad policy. I'm saying it is the textual reading of that statute.
If you have the same 16-year-old who instead is, say, at a 0.25 blood level alcohol, the state would have to file under the CHINS statute because that's the offense that the child has committed.
That is what, in my view, the statute says. If a person under the age of 21 is driving with a BAC of 0.02 or more, must be charged as a CHIN. It's a jurisdictional issue.
And once they get over 0.8, the state still doesn't have discretion to charge under the DUI statute.
I do not believe so. I don't think there's any room for discretion in this statutory language. And I think it makes sense. I don't think it's an absurd result at all that the legislature would want to treat alcohol different than other issues. And that even high BAC, as Ms. Lawler said, a child with a 0.07 BAC, the legislature says needs guidance, control, and supervision. A child with a 0.09 BAC might need slightly more guidance, control, and supervision. What they don't need is to be treated as if they were an adult. Again, I'm getting into the policy issues, but it is only to point out that I do not think the result is absurd at all to suggest that we want to intervene in these children's lives and try to correct a course of conduct before it gets out of hand, while these children are still subject to the guidance, control, and supervision of the CHINS program that the legislature has fashioned exactly for these kinds of kids.
So under the standard 08 DUI statute, it says any person, which was clearly in place at the time that they changed the CHIN statute. Legislature clearly must have envisioned some operation of that statute. How do you disregard the any person language?
Well, I think the any person language, again, I have it here. I can tell you the most recent time that it was enacted. It was 2002 was the last time that statute was changed, at least according to my research. Enacted in 1983, changed in 2002. I think the legislature often, despite the hard work and best efforts of the Legislative Research Council, we know that there are statutes that apply to various issues littered throughout the code. They're not all conveniently placed in the same chapter, in the same book, and others might touch on others, and sometimes some might get missed. But the only way to, if the state's argument is correct, that this statute controls, that any person charged with that, it just completely negates the more recently enacted CHIN statute that clearly says that children with 0.02 or more belong in CHINS court.
Is that recently enacted, counsel? If we're talking about 32-23-21, I understand that to be enacted in 98.
It was enacted in 98. My notes, just from the print off, such as I understand the session laws at the bottom, say that it's been amended numerous times in 99, in 03, in 04, in 06, and in 2019. I do not know that the legislature tinkered with all of that language, but they certainly tinkered with the statute. If it was their intention to make a wholesale revision, I think it would be clear from the language. It's not clear from the language. To me, the necessary result, if the state is correct, and a prosecutor has the discretion to charge some kids as chins and other kids as adults, then it also has the discretion to charge no kids as chins. It could say, you know what, we're done with this chins stuff. We're just going to charge every child with an adult DUI. It renders the statute completely meaningless. And the legislature has told us that it would like this court to construe these statutes to liberally to provide for the guidance, control, and rehabilitation of children. And a DUI first in magistrate court does not provide for the guidance, control, and rehabilitation of children. It's a punishment.
So, counsel, there's been a lot of changes in the juvenile system over the recent years. There's also the juvenile citation process, for example, dealing with certain status offenses. It seems like there is more than maybe just this contrast between dealing with the chins in magistrate court. So, couldn't there also be, is it so absurd that we would have different types of ways of dealing with both misdemeanor conduct and felony conduct? So we have certain felony conduct that's carved out for juveniles that goes to adult court. Why is it so absurd that a certain level of misdemeanors when we're dealing with something like driving under the influence that has so much, unlike some other status offenses like truancy or just alcohol consumption, where you have a real impact on the public when you have juveniles driving with alcohol in their system. So why is it so absurd, or why would it not make sense that maybe some of the misdemeanor category could not also be meant to be handled in another fashion?
I've already confessed this is my first juvenile case. I'm not an expert in juvenile law as Ms. Lawler is. And I would defer a question like that to her. I think the question of, to me, it seems the argument is going more into, I think we need to focus on the textual reading. That is really the extent of my argument in this case. I am not advancing the same arguments that the Pennington County Public Defender's Office is in the companion cases. And so, Justice Devaney, I don't have a great answer for that question. I'm saying that if you read the statute in the way that it is written, it is clear, it's unambiguous, and it makes sense. Are there ways to do things different? Yes. I'm not suggesting that what the state is proposing is absurd. I'm just saying it's not supported by a plain text reading of the statute. There are numerous ways to do it, but until we have an ambiguity, I don't think the court should engage in construing an unambiguous statute to reach a different result.
The lack of ambiguity, if I could interrupt, Mr. Davis.
Of course.
So I understand your argument to place a premium on the text, and I can understand that. The text, however, as you know, cites one statute that's relevant here, 3223.21. Would you agree at a minimum that just as a textual matter and as a matter of essential elements, 3223.21 is not 3223.1?
Yes, I do agree that 21, that the statutes are not the same.
And here's a textual reference to 3223.21 may be read as a textual reference to that statute. How is it that in your view, the plain text compels a different result and a different reading? The plain text does not say 3223.1, self-evident fact. Well, if we can agree that those are different statutes and those are different offenses, in fact, how is it that the reference textually, which is the extent of your argument, to 3223.21 is in fact a reference to 3223.1?
Well, I think it gets to the question, Justice Salter, of the, and it goes back to Justice Devaney's argument of the question of whether, we've got these multiple terms here. We've got arrested for, a child who has violated, a child who has charged with. I think...
Do any of those really matter?
I don't think they matter, because I think the distinction, and the court, there was a question about... I don't think they matter, because to accept that argument is to nullify the plain text of the statute. To me, the distinction is, it's a jurisdictional question. It is not the issue of... I'm out of time.
Thank you.
I'll address it when I come back up. Thank you.
You may proceed, Ms. Wenzel.
May it please the court again and counsel. In November of 2019, law enforcement initiated a stop with a vehicle driving over the speed limit on the interstate. The driver of the vehicle was 16-year-old Zio, and he had bloodshot eyes and smelled of alcohol. His performance on the field sobriety test indicated impairment, and his PBT registered at 0.161. The officer determined that Zio was too impaired to drive and arrested him for DUI, just as in the previous cases. Almost 2 hours after being pulled over, he had a BAC of 0.129% by weight of alcohol. Again, like the others, he was charged with two counts of DUI under the DUI statute. Now, the state would rely on the plain language and supporting arguments made in the previous argument. But I wanted to point out some other things additionally. First of all, counsel talks about canons of construction, right? And how these canons of construction have led him to determine that the statute is unambiguous. However, that's not how this court does statutory interpretation. That's not how statutory interpretation is done. First, you start with the plain language. If the plain language is unambiguous, you don't go to statutory construction or canons. And that's the state's position, that when you read through the statutes, when you read through 26111, when you get to juvenile delinquency and Chins, that's where this court can stop, according to the plain language. I learned early in my legal career, not so much in law school, but in my legal career, that it is helpful to go to the statute books, to the actual books, and read through the chapter if you're trying to understand how to interpret a specific statute. And this court has said it is inappropriate to select one statute on a topic and disregard another that may modify or limit the effective scope. And this is still in statutory interpretation. This is still in plain language. So if the court would want to move past the Chin statute 26111, if you move into Title 32, that's where the DUI statute is. That's where zero tolerance is, and that's where 1.3 is located. And when those statutes are all read together, the legislature clearly limited the reach, I guess, of zero tolerance. Zero tolerance does begin at 0.02, but it does end at 0.08. Now the prosecutor has discretion to drop that charge or to lower it or dismiss it. But that is what the legislature has said. That is the clear and unambiguous text of the legislature. And this court presumes that the legislature is aware of any previous enactments. So the fact that one might be before the other doesn't change this analysis. Another point I would like to make is that prosecutorial discretion really is the prosecutor exercising the executive authority. It's not just a common law concept. This comes from the executive authority in the state and federal constitutions. Finally, I know defendant has talked about, he's not making a policy argument. This is the clear, unambiguous language. And the state recognizes that juveniles are treated differently in some contexts. But the legislature specifically accepted DUI and other violations from the statute. As you pointed out, Justice Devaney, It isn't that every time a juvenile is arrested or violates some law that they go either to juvenile court or CHINS. There are specific exceptions. Sometimes they do go to adult court. Sometimes, for instance, in 26111, it refers to a tobacco violation. And if they are arrested for that, they go straight to straight to a court with jurisdiction over that offense, which would be magistrate or circuit court. And the legislature has a strong interest in protecting the public from impaired drivers. And that's the difference. When you look at the CHIN statute, these are status offenses. Truancy, running away from home. In subsection 5, it's 35-9-5. That's minor consumption or possession of alcohol. That is a status offense. So I understand that there might be competing policies, but reconciling those competing policies is for the legislature. This court has said that courts read statutes for their plain meaning and effect, and they don't insert words into statutes that don't exist. And this is especially true when the legislature has not clearly extended its juvenile policies that far. If the court has no further questions, again, I would rely on the arguments made in my previous argument, but I would ask this court to affirm the convictions, and if it's still okay, I will stop early.
Thank you, Ms. Wenzel. Rebuttal, Mr. Davis.
Thank you. I'll just pick up where we left off, Justice Salter. I think the difference is, that we're talking about here in the question of prosecutorial discretion is the question was raised of whether the legislature has limited prosecutorial discretion in ways like this before. My research indicates that, I'll go back. To me, the distinction in this case, we're not talking about whether the prosecutors have discretion to charge an adult, for example, with first-degree murder instead of second-degree murder. That's the concept of prosecutorial discretion that we're usually familiar with. I think the reason this case is unique is we are not talking about that kind of prosecutorial discretion. We're talking about a jurisdictional issue. And that's why I think this case has nothing to do with prosecutorial discretion, is the CHIN statute is a jurisdictional question. And so I am not familiar with, and I admit that my research is not exhaustive, but I'm not familiar with another area of the law where a law enforcement officer or a prosecutor has the discretion to choose which court to proceed in. That is the exclusive prerogative of the legislature, and that's how I think this case is different, and that's what I think the CHIN statute does. So we're taking an unambiguous statute, and I don't think Ms. Wenzel's argument is correct, respectfully. I think what she is trying to do is harmonize multiple statutes to reach the result that the state wants to reach in this case. But the jurisdictional statute that says a child who has violated the zero tolerance statute is a child in need of supervision is jurisdictional, not a charging question. And it's my intent that that answers your question, Justice Salter. It may not. If it doesn't, I'm sure you'll clear it up for me.
Thank you very much.
Just addressing some of the other issues, going back to the question of the statutory text that discusses the child being arrested for a violation of law, that seems to give the law enforcement officer's discretion, and the statute does not provide for anyone to have discretion, whether it's violated or charged with. That is not the ultimate inquiry. The ultimate inquiry is, again, the statutory text that sets the jurisdiction of children in having a blood alcohol content of 0.02 or higher in magistrate court. I do not think that the language allows for any discretion to reach the opposite result, and I think it would take a more on-point statute in order to do that. That is really the extent of my argument in this case, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Case is now submitted. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.